The news came through on Wednesday, just as we were wrapping up the program, that Browns receiver Josh Gordon has been suspended for the full year. And it's actually not the full year. It's just the full season with the opportunity to apply for reinstatement after the season ends. And in that respect, the NFL has deviated from the language of its substance abuse policy. Even though Gordon will miss all of the coming season, Josh Gordon will be able, in theory, to get back in time to have some meaningful contribution in the offseason program for 2015, which is a lot better than what the situation would have been if the policy had been applied as written. If the policy had been applied as written, Josh Gordon would have been suspended until August 27 of 2015. I should do the entire show one day with an Italian accent just for fun. Anyway, he's not suspended until August 27 of 2015, unless the reinstatement application process takes as long as the suspension process took. We shouldn't have known about any of it until yesterday. This should have been something that just dropped out of the clear blue sky yesterday, in theory, but it was reported back in May, and it languished on the desk of Harold Henderson, the appeal officer. And people have asked me, why was there a 23-day delay? You know, the best I can come up with is that the more time and space that the NFL put between the Ray Rice suspension and the Josh Gordon suspension, the less people are talking about the Ray Rice suspension now that Josh Gordon's been suspended for a year. And you know what? People really aren't talking much about the Ray Rice suspension. And the NFL's preferred talking points, the idea that it's two different policies, two different procedures, collectively bargained, you know, that all makes sense. The end result is one guy got suspended two games for knocking out his fiance in an elevator. The other guy got suspended a full year for smoking a substance that is legal in two of the 22 states where the NFL does business. And this entire process, this entire policy, this entire program is a vestige of the Nancy Reagan war on drugs days of the 80s when the NFL and the NFLPA got together and thought it'd be a good idea to tell guys what they can and can't have in their urine, which means telling them what they can and can't do on their own time, which means they can't smoke marijuana off the clock, in the off season, away from the facility, privacy of their own home, wet towel at the bottom of the door, so I'm told. They can't do it. And if you do it, you get caught, you get suspended, and ultimately you don't have a job. So the only way this is going to change is if the NFLPA bargains for a better system, a more fair system, a more just system, a more modern system with the NFL. The problem is, if you want something from the NFL, you got to give something up. That's what collective bargaining is about. And most of the players are either smart enough or not hooked on marijuana that they know you've got that one annual substance abuse test between, yes, 420, April 20, and August 9. Once you pass that, smoke them if you got them, you're good to go. Most of the guys deal with that. Some guys get ensnared in the testing program, and some guys end up being suspended for the full year. But take heart, Calgary Stampeders fans. There's a chance Josh Gordon is going to be playing in the CFL. It's a slim chance at this point. First, the Browns have to agree to it. And I'm told, and we reported earlier today, that Josh Gordon has asked the Browns if he can get an exemption from paragraph 3 of the standard player contract, which prevents him from playing football for anyone else while he's under contract with the Browns. And even though he's suspended, he's still under contract with the Browns. The Calgary Stampeders have his rights. They would like to get him. Now, after Ricky Williams, while he was suspended for violations of the substance abuse policy, marijuana issue, he played in Canada back in 2006 with the blessing of the Dolphins. After that, the CFL adopted a policy, presumably, that prevents players who are suspended by the NFL from playing in the CFL. Now, the donut hole that has emerged very recently is if the guy's suspended by the NFL but not under contract with an NFL team, then they'll give him safe harbor like Toronto has done with LaVon Brazil, formerly of the Colts. But Brazil's still under suspension by the NFL. And then I've seen people like Alex Marvez, who knows his stuff, say that, well, it only applies to PED suspensions, not substance abuse suspensions, because the Canadian Football League doesn't have a substance abuse policy. Well, fine, but they started this whole new policy in the aftermath of Ricky Williams going to Canada because of the substance abuse policy. So this is all over the map. It's vague, it's convoluted, it's confusing. And here's the bottom line. Like any other business, the CFL is going to do whatever the hell it wants to do. The CFL is going to find a way through these weeds, change policies if you need to, adjust provisions, make exceptions, do whatever if they decide they want Josh Gordon to be in Canada, in the CFL. And it's a business driven by ticket sales and TV exposure and everything that goes along with it. Is the CFL more interesting with Josh Gordon? Yeah. So the CFL will find a way if he can get the appropriate blessings and dispensations from the Cleveland Browns. There's no indication that he ever will get those blessings and dispensations, although the Dolphins did do it 8 years ago with Ricky Williams, who plays a position that is far more conducive to injury than receiver. And if the Browns want Josh Gordon to have the structure of a team and it can't be the Browns or any other NFL team, why not? Why not let him go play in Canada? We'll keep you updated on that one at ProFootballTalk.com. We'll talk more about Josh Gordon coming up later. But before we transition to Mary-Kate Cabot of the Cleveland Plain Dealer to talk Josh Gordon, I want to mention this whole Tom Brady is upset about Logan Mankins thing, because when I first heard it, the report was from Jason Cole of Bleacher Report. I thought back to the whole Wes Welker debacle and how someone from, I think it was Tom Brady's family, maybe his dad, said something to Tom Curran that Tom was upset, and then Tom got upset that his dad said he was upset. And unless you talk to Tom Brady or someone who has spoken directly to Tom Brady, you don't know whether or not he's really upset. Well, all that set aside, my understanding is, according to a source with knowledge of the situation and all the appropriate provisos and protections, Tom Brady is really upset. He's pissed off. He's not happy with what happened with Logan Mankins. It makes the offensive line worse. And in a roundabout way, and I haven't heard it put this way, but the idea that Brady did a contract that creates cap space for the Patriots and not using that cap space to keep Logan Mankins, that exacerbates the problem. Now, one last thing, and this will be coming up more as time goes by, because the popular reaction in the aftermath of Mankins' trade is at some point Brady's going to be the guy who's abruptly traded or cut by the Patriots. I don't know that it's going to go down that way. I think the more likely outcome is that Tom Brady will continue, barring injury, to be the starting quarterback of the Patriots until his current contract ends. He's got 4 more years. At that point, he will be 40 going on 41, not to be confused with 40 going on 47. And at that point, he'll have to make a decision. Do I leave the Patriots if they don't want me? Do I go to another team where I create a Brett Favre, Peyton Manning spectacle? Or do I just walk off into the sunset even though I feel like I can keep playing? That's what's coming in 4 years. I think he stays with the Patriots for the balance of his contract. And why wouldn't the Patriots want him at $7 million, $8 million, and $9 million in 2015, 16, and 17 respectively? After that, that's where the proverbial rubber is going to meet the road. Brady could be hitting the road. And Brady's going to have to ask himself, do I want to play for another team? Or do I walk away and retire, even though I feel like I can still play for a few more years? We'll see how that all plays out in the coming years. Much sooner than that, we'll get an update on where the Browns are now that Josh Gordon will not be a Brown for 2014 and possibly beyond if he can't stay clean. We'll talk to Mary-Kate Cabot of the Cleveland Plain Dealer about that, and then we'll talk to you. We got a lot of questions about Josh Gordon, and I've covered most of the angles. I think we have some other questions as well. We'll get to those. We'll open the phone lines. If you want to call in and ask about Josh Gordon, I'll answer your question. We're just going to try to deal with other things. Before we deal with other things, let's talk a little bit more about Josh Gordon. We'll do it with Mary-Kate Cabot after the break. This is PFT Live. There's the statement issued yesterday, right about this very time, by Josh Gordon in connection with his suspension. He's drawn some criticism for calling into question the NFL's exercise of discretion and judgment in his case, because people say, well, if you would exercise better discretion and judgment, you would have gotten suspended. In response to that, I say, go read Jim Irsay's quotes about what it means to have an addiction and whether or not the NFL should be a little bit more forgiving, and will the NFL be less forgiving with Irsay? Will it be as unforgiving with Irsay as it was with Josh Gordon? But that's a topic for another day, because today's topic continues to be Josh Gordon, especially because he'd like to play in the CFL and the Calgary Stampeders would like for him to play for them. What we'd like to do now is talk to Mary-Kate Cabot at the Cleveland Plain Dealer. Tell me the latest, because look, we can get caught up in all the policies and rules in the CFL, but as long as Gordon's under contract with the Browns have to give him written permission to play football somewhere else. Will they do that?
No, they won't. So right now, not only is he not permitted to play in the CFL per CFL rules, the Ricky Williams rule, but the Browns will not grant him permission to do so anyway. So even if he wanted to keep going and, you know, challenge the Ricky Williams rule per antitrust laws, the Browns are still going to say no. So it's really not going to help him.
Yeah, and look, here's my take on the whole Canadian rules. They're going to do whatever they want to do. If they want to create a space for Josh Gordon, they will make exceptions. They will craft their way around it. But none of it matters if the Browns won't let Josh Gordon go play in the CFL because he's still under contract to them. But that seems even more unfair. He's under contract to them, but he's not allowed to work for them. And in turn, he's not allowed to work for anybody else. What is he going to do during his time away from the Browns if he's not going to play football in Canada?
Well, you know, I know that the Browns have been actively involved in trying to set up some things for him so that he's just not kind of floundering out there. I think one of the things that everyone will probably check into very thoroughly is, you know, does he need some more treatment? He checked himself into 2 weeks of rehab after the DWI. So I think everybody wants to try to find out, you know, where he is, do an assessment on him that way and see if he needs some more of you know, inpatient treatment or whatever the case may be. So I think that's one thing that will be looked at. And then I think they'll try to set him up with some good mentors and try to keep him, you know, active and in terms of, you know, staying in shape football-wise and all of that. So I know they've talked to a lot of people, and Josh Gordon's whole legal team and all of his advisors have talked to people, and everybody's trying to make sure that he's going to be okay.
And on the subject of legal advisors, I know we both reported that all options are on the table. It's a steep uphill climb if Josh Gordon decides to pursue litigation. At best, maybe he could delay the suspension for a season or so while the litigation is pending. Any definitive word on whether or not he's going to pursue that avenue?
No, I don't know for sure if he will, but again, you know, as you know, in order to get the temporary restraining order, you have to really demonstrate that the chances of winning it are great. And, you know, even just based on the StarCaps case, which went all the way up to the Minnesota Supreme Court, and the Williams' loss there, I don't know if he would get the TRO to begin with. I don't know if they feel that it's worth it. You know, at this point, what you're looking at is if he's on his best behavior for 4 solid months and does everything that he needs to do, you know, perhaps he can come back in January. Again, they bent the rules there a little bit, and they'll reevaluate this thing in January about when he can apply for reinstatement. 4 months is really actually not that long of a period of time for Josh to be out there doing what he needs to do, and then he can get back in possibly as early as January and start getting his Browns career back on track.
And you mentioned that likelihood of success on the merits. That's one of the four factors that a court looks at in issuing what initially is a temporary restraining order. It becomes a preliminary injunction. I lived that life for far too long, and I've handled cases like that. The StarCaps plaintiffs were able to delay the suspension. And for Pat Williams, he retired by the time the suspension became effective. But it's not an easy thing to do, and you have to have some legal basis in Ohio or federal law that you can point to that this whole thing is not in compliance with the appropriate legal standards. What do the Browns do now without Josh Gordon? And shouldn't they have done more to plan for life without Josh Gordon since they've known about this since before at least the second day of the draft?
Yeah, you know what? I mean, I think that they felt like they addressed the situation. I think they thought, hey, Nate Burleson can come in here and pick up some of the slack. We've got Charles Johnson coming off of an ACL that picked him up last year off the Packers practice squad. They've got Travis Benjamin back. I think they felt they were in good shape. They added Anthony Armstrong, who he sat out of football last year, but they had some experience with him and thought he would be good. They ended up having to cut him. So I think they felt when they put all these guys together that they could come up with receiver by committee. Now, it hasn't worked out that way because Nate Burleson has missed all of the preseason so far with a hamstring injury. Is he going to be okay? I don't know. He's 33 years old. So that's a tough injury to come back from. Miles Austin, he has stayed healthy, but right now he has no chemistry with Brian Hoyer. So I think what they need to do is look hard at the waiver wire after Saturday, and if they don't find anything they like there, they're going to have to explore some trades.
What do you think about Santana Moss? I'm intrigued by the possibility of Moss coming to Cleveland. Every year it seems like he's on the bubble in Washington. Every year he ends up keeping his job, but he knows that offense. From his time with Kyle Shanahan, he could step right in and help out. Is that a name you're hearing that they maybe will be interested in if he doesn't make the final 53?
You know what? I haven't heard it yet, but I do think that they would consider someone like that. That's exactly the kind of guy that they will be needing to look at. I mean, they're not going to find a perfect situation, If it was perfect, the guy would already be here or on some other team. I mean, they did actually consider Santonio Holmes. I mean, they did kick the tires on that. I think that Mike Pettine, probably liked him when they were there together with the Jets, and then, you know, he ended up signing with the Bears. But, they were looking at things like that, and, you know, if they're going to do that, then for sure that they would look at a Santana Moss.
Let's go back to the draft, and let's assume that the Browns knew when they traded the fourth overall pick to the Bills that Josh Gordon was facing this one-year suspension. Why didn't they take Sammy Watkins?
Well, first of all, they don't value that position, the receiver position, that high in the draft. Ray Farmer has gone on record as saying those superstar receivers don't win you Super Bowls to begin with. They felt that they could pick up that extra first-round pick. And at that time, they didn't know they were going to get Johnny Manziel. They figured, let's go with the cornerback in Justin Gilbert. Let's pick up the extra first-round pick for next year, looking ahead to a quarterback class in 2015 that's supposed to be very deep and very talented. And, you know, hey, maybe look at a Marcus Mariota or someone in 2015. So I think that was probably the thinking process there. And, you know, as this thing plays out, I mean, that other first-round pick that they got from the Bills could shape up to be a fairly high pick, and they could be, who knows, maybe they'll even be in a position where they want to look at quarterbacks again next year. We'll find that out as the season goes along. But I think this one needs to play out. Let's see how it goes for two or three years and find out if they made a good choice or a bad choice there.
And assuming that Ray Farmer's theory is correct, that you don't need a top-end receiver to win a Super Bowl, and I don't know that I agree with him, but let's give him the benefit of the doubt. Let's rewind to October of 2013 when they know that Josh Gordon is one bad Friday night away from a full-season suspension, and if you don't need a top-end receiver to win a Super Bowl, why don't you trade him? I've heard second-round pick plus a player they could have gotten, and they said no to it. Why did they say no if they indeed did have a chance to trade Josh Gordon?
Well, that is true. You know, I have been told, and I have reported that that's what they had. They had a second-round pick on the table and players, and I think they might have had that more than one offer like that. Joe Banner wanted to trade him. Mike Lombardi wanted to trade him. They never really liked him from the beginning. They never really liked the situation from the beginning, let me say that. They didn't really like the fact that he was, like you said, just one strike away from being kicked out of the league for a minimum of a year. So they wanted to trade him, but Rob Chudzinski really felt, I mean, this is an aftermath of the Trent Richardson trade. The city was still reeling. The team was still reeling from that. These guys felt that they had a good support system around him. He came to trust Scott Turner, North Turner. He was flourishing under them. And also, from what I understand, you know, Jimmy Haslam was in support of keeping Josh Gordon as well. So those were some of the reasons it didn't happen.
What's their plan now for Josh Gordon going forward? We've seen reports, and I don't know whether they're on the record. I think Jimmy Haslam said something at some point in the not-too-distant past that they're not going to cut Josh Gordon. How much longer will they be patient with Josh Gordon? I think it's admirable to give him a place that he can come back to if he gets reinstated. Not that there wouldn't be another team out there that would want him, but how much longer do they continue to keep him around if, especially, he continues to violate the policy?
Well, you know what? I think he's probably got maybe, you know, he's got to stay clean. If one more failed drug test or one more violation of the policy or one misstep like that, and he's gone. So he's really got to keep it on the straight and narrow right now. And the other thing to consider is he still has a DWI hearing coming up. And if you look at what Roger Goodell looks at when he's says yay or nay on whether you can get back in the league. He does look at what you have done since your suspension was first announced. And since that time, Josh Gordon's been picked up twice, stopped once for speeding with a smell of marijuana in the car and a passenger cited for possession, another time a DWI. That's not going to help him when he has to sit in front of Roger Goodell. If you really read the policy, which I've read so many times my eyes are blurry, if you read that policy, that's a factor when you sit down back in front of him. Hey, you went out and got a DWI after you knew you were suspended. So I think, you know, that's not going to help his cause. I don't think the Browns, one more misstep and he's gone from the Browns.
Yeah, and also, even though it's a first offense DUI, the policy, and this falls under the substance abuse policy, not the personal conduct policy when you have a DUI, if you have other incidents of discipline under the substance abuse policy, that could result in a suspension for a first offense DUI. So even if he gets reinstated for 2015, he still could be sitting out a couple of games to start the season, whether it's with the Browns or anyone else. Okay, I've and you know, the best news, with all the Josh Gordon talk, nobody's talking about Johnny Manziel. But I'll ask you this. When do you think we'll see Manziel as the full-time starting quarterback?
Ooh, that's a tough question because I don't know yet exactly how Brian Hoyer is going to do. The leash is as long as Brian can make it. If Brian can win, he stays in the game. But right now, again, things don't look good in large part because of the supporting cast that we have talked about. Let me say Johnny by midseason right now.
Yeah, and I think it's going to be week five if you look at Steelers, Saints, and Ravens right out of the gates, a bye week to get Johnny ready, and then Jimmy Haslam takes his new sports car down to Tennessee when he goes back for the first time as owner of the Browns with that team, and Titans team they should be able to beat probably with either guy at quarterback. Will we see Manziel in a specialty package? Mike Pettine said yes, then no, then yes. Where does that stand?
Well, where it stands is the last thing he has said was he does not really want to do it early on. But, you know, that could change. Let's see what happens tonight in their game against the Bears. If he continues to provide the spark that he did against the Rams, where he ran in for that touchdown and got the whole stadium all fired up and doing the money sign and all that, if he continues to show that he's ready for that kind of thing, why not put a package in against the Steelers and give Dick LeBeau at least something else to think about with this offense. Another playmaker, something else to take up a little time on Wednesday and Thursday leading up to that game. So I would not be surprised to see it for the first game.
One way or the other, he'll be in Pittsburgh in 10 days and in uniform. Whether he plays or not remains to be seen. Thanks for your time as always, Mary Kay. We'll talk to you again soon.
Sounds good. Thanks a lot.
All right, this is Mary Kay Cabot with the update on Josh Gordon. And look, that it's fun to talk about and think about and just consider that, hey, we'd have a reason to watch Canadian football. If the Browns aren't going to let him play, then he's not going to play. They have to sign off. There has to be an express written permission for Josh Gordon to play in Canada. And really, if the Browns are looking for a support system for Josh Gordon, you know, being part of a team, being in a locker room, maybe having, you know, it's better than no team. And the key is he's going to have to stay away from marijuana, even if he does have an addiction. He's going to have to stay away from it. Up to 10 times a month he's going to be tested. And if he can't stay clean, he's not getting back in. When we come back, you're getting in with your questions, if you have any. We know you've got some via Twitter. But dial us up, 888-237-5269. We will take your calls and answer your questions when we come back. This is PFT Live. It is PFT Planet Time. And you know what? Before we get to the first question, I always monitor Twitter during the program, and we see a name pop up on the trending. You get curious, a name like Joan Rivers, and here's hoping she pulls through. She's in critical condition, complications during routine outpatient throat surgery. My mom would be 80 right now. Joan Rivers is 81, and my mom loved Joan Rivers. And one of the things I learned, like when Jim Garner died earlier this year, if it's somebody that you know, your parent, and both my parents are gone, it feels like a little bit like going through their passing again when you know it's somebody they really like. So anyway, here's the best to Joan Rivers, who remains hilarious and was a pioneer. The pioneer for this program as it relates to the, I keep looking at the wrong camera too. We're using a different camera today, and I keep looking at the wrong one. That's the wrong one. That's the right one. And here comes the right Twitter question, hopefully, to start things off. It comes to us courtesy of at Martello16. Odds EJ Manuel is going to be a top 20 quarterback this year. I don't know that top 20 is good enough to really make a difference for the Buffalo Bills. They better hope he's better than top 20, and I think that's why they gave up what they did. Unlike the Cleveland Browns, who don't view a a highly drafted receiver as a necessity. The Bills went all in with Sammy Watkins to try to make E.J. Manuel better, to try to make the team better, to try to get the team closer to the postseason, because with a new owner coming through the door, if this team isn't closer to the postseason, Doug Whaley, Doug Marrone, and everyone else in the football operation is going to be very close to not being employed. So they need E.J. Manuel to be better than top 20. And top 20, you know, you hear top 10, and if everybody who we think is a top 10 quarterback was in the top 10, there'd be 17 top 10 quarterbacks. Top 20 is still a fairly high bar when you look around the league. That last five or so, not so good. But I think E.J. Manuel is going to have to perform top half of the league, and Sammy Watkins is going to be a big part of that. Otherwise, new GM, new coach, and eventually, because the financial investment and the financial consequence and the cap hit, not like it used to be, it's a lot easier to move on from a quarterback who just isn't getting it done. Next, we're going to see if Hugo's Head gets it done. This is the question courtesy of Twitter from at Hugo's Head. When Jim Harbaugh gets fired after the season, will the new coach want to keep Colin Kaepernick at quarterback? Well, first of all, your question assumes that Jim Harbaugh is going to be fired. I don't think Jim Harbaugh is going to be fired by the San Francisco 49ers. He's taken the team to the NFC title game three straight years, and even if they have a down year, he ain't getting fired. What will happen is after the season, they're going to sign him to an extension, or they're going to trade him to another team. And we know that's going to happen. We know that's going to possibly happen because the talk and the report that the Browns were talking to him, the 49ers, about a trade for Harbaugh this year. So before the season even ends, I think calls will be made to the 49ers that, hey, if you can't work out a deal with Harbaugh, we'll consider trading for him. I could see Miami at the top of that list, for example, if they don't make it to the postseason. But if Harbaugh's gone next year for whatever reason, this Colin Kaepernick contract, it gives the 49ers maximum flexibility year in and year out to decide whether or not they want to keep Colin Kaepernick. It truly is a year-to-year deal. They have until April 1 next year before his salary that's guaranteed for injury only becomes fully guaranteed. That gives them time to explore free agency. That gives them time to look at any trades. That gives them an opportunity to do a lot of their draft work. So if there is a new coach, and new owner wants his own GM, new GM wants his own coach, new coach wants his own quarterback, it very well could be that if Harbaugh isn't back with the 49ers next year, Kaepernick either won't be back or will be on a make-or-break, up-or-out year in 2015. Let's go to the phone lines. Fred in Toronto. Welcome,
hey,
Fred.
How you doing, Mike?
Good. How are
good,
you?
Good. Listen, I got a real beef with the term the Patriot way. If the Patriot way means you should be trading away some of your best, most stalwart players for speculation positions such as, I don't know anything about Tim Wright or even the fourth rounder. What's he going to be? I'm not a Patriot fan at all, and I hate the term genius when in reference to Bill Belichick. I think it's all a guise. I think it's all smoke and mirrors. I think his team is worse off now than it was before the Mankins trade.
And, you know, and thank you for the call. And that's a fair point, and I appreciate that candor. Look, when you have three Super Bowl wins in 4 years, you tend to get the benefit of the doubt. And Bill Belichick doesn't have a lot of friends in the media, but the friends that he does have in the media tend to go to bat for him pretty loudly when it's time to, for example, take Ryan Mallett with the 74th overall pick in the draft and declare Bill Belichick to be a genius. What's Ryan Mallett done? They're going to end up potentially cutting him if they can't trade him for a ham sandwich and a bowl of soup coming up over the next few days. So there are times where Belichick makes mistakes. Albert Haynesworth, Chad Ochocinco, they have made mistakes. But you get the benefit of the doubt when you win three Super Bowls in 4 years. Now, with Logan Mankins, they are taking a calculated risk here. And, you know, one thing that I haven't addressed yet, and I'll write something about it this afternoon, there was some ugliness between Logan Mankins and the organization a few years ago when he was under the franchise tag, and he took a shot at ownership. And look, I think that the Patriot way has an exception for a small handful of their favorite sons, like, say, maybe a Troy Brown and possibly a Tom Brady. But Logan Mankins wasn't going to get any of that consideration, and I think that fueled the effort to get him to take a pay cut and ultimately fueled the willingness to move on from Logan Mankins. And now Tom Brady is going to have to worry about a guy blasting through the left guard position and diving at that surgically repaired left knee. Back to the Twitter bag, page, whatever, from Unknown Sphinx. Now that's a good name. Well, decent name for a fantasy team. Do you think the Lions have a shot at a playoff run this year. Well, they have a shot. Everybody's got a shot except the Raiders. And I know I keep saying that, and I am inviting disaster by saying that every team in the NFL this year has a chance to get to the playoffs and win the Super Bowl except the Oakland Raiders. Well, I won't necessarily say get to the Super Bowl, but every team except the Raiders has a chance to get to the playoffs. The Lions, yeah, they can make a run. The Lions need to take care of the defensive side of the ball. On offense, they should be pretty good. They've got the weapons. There's no excuse if they're not great on offense. And hopefully, reluctant franchise quarterback Matthew Stafford fully embraces what it means to be the leader of a team on the field. Hopefully, they can press the right buttons to get a little bit more out of him in that respect. On defense, secondary, specifically the cornerback position, a real concern. Defensive line, you got, it's like everybody in the interior side of that line is on their contract year. And has Nick Fairley responded to that? Not really. How will Sue play? CJ Mosley's in a contract year. So the defense needs to hold up its end of the bargain. We could have some Arena Football League scores for the Detroit Lions this year if the offense clicks, because I'm not sure the defense is really going to be able to stop anybody. And you consider they're playing the Packers twice, the Bears twice, high-powered offenses. North Turner's offense in Minnesota is going to be better than people realize. Could be a lot of high-scoring games. Take the over when it comes to points for the Detroit Lions this year. Let's go back to the phone lines. Kenneth in Texas, you're on PFT Live. What's up, Kenneth?
Hey, so long-suffering Vikings fan, how long before Teddy Bridgewater is going to start for us? I'm trying not to get too excited about being 3-0 in preseason, but can't help it. I mean, I like what I see with him.
Yeah, and you know, he's definitely going to be, thank you for the call, the most popular guy in Minnesota. He's already becoming the face of the franchise, to the possible chagrin of Adrian Peterson, who may not be the face of the franchise or part of the franchise for a whole lot longer. But they love Teddy. They love what they've seen. And if Matt Cassel stumbles, if Matt Cassel doesn't lead the team to victories, I think that you have to look at coming up in October, there's a Thursday night game against the Green Bay Packers. Mini bye on the back end before the Lions come to Minnesota with that defense that may be a little challenged when it comes to talent. So that's the hot spot to watch for Minnesota. That Thursday night in October when they host, or they go to Green Bay, I believe. There it is there. It is at Green Bay, week 5. So it would be coming out of week 5 going into week 6. Detroit Lions, that could be the point where the change is made, depending upon what happens against the Rams, Patriots, Saints, Falcons, and Green Bay Packers on national TV. So Bridgewater era could begin at home week 6 against Detroit Lions, and then the other hot spot would be the bye week, but that's fairly late. For the Browns, it comes early enough that maybe that's where they do the swap. For the Vikings, long time to wait for the bye, that mini bye after the Packers game is what I'm targeting. One more question before we call it a day from at Vinny Rodelli. Vinny Rodelli with a lot of eyes. If Terrell Pryor gets cut by the Seahawks, any chance the Rams give him a shot? Well, absolutely, I'd say there's a chance the Rams at least consider him. In the aftermath of the Sam Bradford torn ACL, Jeff Fisher was adamant that we're sticking with Sean Hill. Yes, at some point we'll discuss other options, but look, this was, regardless of what the Rams are going to do, if you're looking for someone else, you can't come off as desperate, because it's either going to cost too much to get them or you're going to have to give up more in trade. Either way, it's not smart to look desperate on any position at any time in the NFL. But if Terrell Pryor does get cut by the Seahawks, yeah, I mean, you've got the added benefit if he knows the offense. Not necessarily would know it better than a team that faces him twice a year when Jeff Fisher's a defensive guru, but he comes in, he makes the depth chart better. That's the key. He's got NFL experience as a starter. Austin Davis doesn't. Garrett Gilbert doesn't. He would be a much better backup to Sean Hill than what they currently have. And I'd be shocked if the Rams don't go out and get somebody who could be that game day. If Sean Hill gets a concussion or some other injury, you bring in Terrell Pryor or someone else to get it done. And remember this. I mean, there are some Terrell Pryor and Tim Tebow similarities from the standpoint of not very accurate pass, but extremely athletic. Terrell Pryor is much more athletic than Tim Tebow. And the Rams in the past, they've uttered the T word from time to time behind closed doors. They've been linked to Tebow, so I think Terrell Pryor would be at least a consideration, as would any quarterback who would be better than Austin Davis and Garrett Gilbert. That's it for today's PFT Live. We'll be back tomorrow to close out the week. Before then, 5:30 p.m. Eastern Time tonight on NBCSN. It's Pro Football Talk, and it's ProFootballTalk.com around the clock on your laptop, desktop, cell phone device, tablet, or anything else that gets the internet. We'll see you back here again tomorrow.